Good evening, afternoon, morning, and everything in between. Welcome to Cheater, 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 and the Rude, Rude, Rude. This is Jeff Chrysler, author of the book Get Rich Cheating. Lee Papa from the Rude blog will be with us shortly, reporting in from his experience at Bonnaroo, where, you know, it mixes the culture with the politics. But today, I want to talk about some of the news items, some of the things that are alleged news items, and some of the things that shouldn't be news items, as we look a little bit at the world. Right here, Cheater of the Rude on Progressive Radio Network. We are moving in different directions. We want to keep on walking, and we hope that you bring a map and help us get to our destination. That's not the slogan, so let's play the theme song. Everybody hit it. All right, we don't have a theme song. We do, but we're not playing it right now. Scott Walker has been charged with being part of a criminal scheme. At least that's what the prosecutors want to do. And I got to give a big shout out to David Schuster, formerly of Current TV, where I used to work, who said this was the case over a year ago, a year and a half ago or so, that Scott Walker was going to be slammed for being part of a criminal enterprise to skirt the campaign finance law. So kudos to David Schuster. I'm not sure what he's doing now. I think he's at Al Jazeera America. I don't know. I feel like if there's a place where people will know what David Schuster is up to, it is the Progressive Radio Network. We're moving laterally in hopes to increase our draft position. We hope that you will grade us based upon our intangibles. I not only enjoy making fun of the slogan of PRN, you know, we're moving, would you help us pack our boxes, but I enjoy obscure news mixed with allegedly important news, because really, who amongst us knows what really matters? We can spend all our time trying to sift through the headlines, the politics, and say this matters, and we can have our reasons. It matters because it affects people. It matters because children aren't going to grow into adults who don't know what they're doing, but we don't really know. So maybe the people that are totally ignorant and sit on their porches drinking lemonade made from the blood of lemons, maybe they have it all figured out. But nonetheless, we all have our judgments about what's important, and I do. And I also recognize my own inability to really know. So sometimes I will take things that don't seem important to me, and I will discuss them. For instance, I was recently asked to comment on the fact that there are all these new emoji coming out, or emoji, or emojums. Let me see right here. How many of these new emojis are there? There are 250 new emoji entering our universe soon, but none of them apparently represent African Americans. And this has me in a quandary, because I don't care, and I feel like I'm supposed to care. Because it's a progressive issue about representation, but who cares? You know, there's a new Godzilla movie, but the Godzilla wasn't representing certain demographics. But it shouldn't matter, right? It shouldn't matter whatsoever. So there are 250 new emoji coming out, and emojis, for those of you who don't know, is a visual shorthand first developed back in 1999 by a guy named Shigetaka Kurita. You know, they're like emoticons on steroids. And I realize the listeners here on PRN, we are moving into a text-based system. We hope that you will hieroglyphic with us. Probably don't really care about emojis any more than I do. But nonetheless, this is potentially the future of communication. These are the hieroglyphs. These are the wall cave paintings of our future overlords, how they're going to judge us and what we're about. And now we're just going to be limited to dancing white women in leotards next to money bags and the Spock signal, the Vulcan death grip. And then there's one here of somebody. So anyway, the point is, well, there's not much of a point, except that I was told this is news, and I had to comment on it. And I don't consider that news. And it made me realize, if someone decided it was news, is it news? I mean, who really decides, right? And that's one of the issues with our internet world of there being so much information, who decides what is worth your attention? And it brings me to this YouTube situation. YouTube is now, because of their production deals, they're going to remove certain content from YouTube. Not just because of they always done it for copyright infringement or illegality, but they're going to remove competitors' content. And it strikes me that they are reintroducing or enhancing the gatekeeper economy, the middleman economy, what I would term the useless middleman economy, or at least the frustrating middleman economy, the agent economy. And so much of our economy is based upon agency, and often a malevolent agency, often an agency not based upon really helping people find their place. And I had a discussion with a friend of mine who's super defensive about the tech industry, and understandably so. It's not about usually agents who provide a hard service outside of the selectivity or the selectionosity that they do in the gatekeeper role. That's not a word. Like YouTube, there's a technology there. There's a distribution. There's a service there that perhaps they can justify getting some charge over. Being a gatekeeper simply because you hold the information was essentially the promise of the internet, or the elimination of that was the promise of the internet. And yet people are reasserting that. Is this a bad thing? I don't know. I mean, we never signed a contract that said everything's going to be free and easy. But I think there was an expectation that the internet would provide us all, an extra couple inches of height and better breath and thicker, fuller hair. And now I'm realizing that's not the case because YouTube's not going to let Adele be on their website. So is that news? Is it news that who determines the news has become the news? Or is just simply emojis of the news? It was the news to Chili's right here on the Atlantic. Chili's has installed 45,000 tablets in their restaurants. Now, I actually consider that news in the sense that I actively fight to have family time at meals, to have a conversation, to not be the place where we're staring at screens at televisions. And now Chili's is going to put those screens right at the table. I consider it news because I've deluded myself that I can make it so my kid won't be a screen man. That when I go out to restaurants and I see family sit down and immediately pull out the screens for distraction, not even wait to see if it was a mean that I do judge a little. And I realized by saying that out loud and in this public forum here on PRN, we are moving mountains. We hope that you will climb with us. I realize that I'm setting myself up, sir, for some karmic retribution, so, you know, feel free to do it. But nonetheless, I judge that. Not even to mention the impact on service economy by having, these tablets at the table of Chili's restaurants so that you don't interact with the wait staff. I mean, there's an economic effect. There's a health effect because people, it's studies are showing they're ordering more desserts and appetizers, the worst parts of meals, although you really, it's all food. You shouldn't eat ever. Just breathe air, eat air. You'll be fine, like that Barbie chick from Russia or wherever, Ukraine, someplace. There's the health effect because the more obese people, the more our collective health care bills go up. And there's also really a social interaction effect. And it's because it's, people say they order more desserts and appetizers because they're not being judged by the human whom they might order from. And there's a benefit to feeling judged by other people because when even if those people aren't judging you, you're essentially judging yourself. You are reflecting back a sort of a guilt through having to express your carnal, I'll use that word, desires. I mean, there's an id and ego question here. And human interaction is how societies and cultures and mores and morals and ethics and social norms are formed. And if we eliminate that, if we essentially just interact with screens that are there to give us what we want and even predictively provide us what we algorithmically desire, and then we lose a sense of community, of culture, and it's not just an issue of kumbaya. It's an issue of, then how do we judge laws? How do we judge right and wrong? How do we say murder is bad? I mean, who's to tell the kids of the future if they are weaned on a machine that says, dude, what do you want? Here it is. What do you want? You're getting it in 2 days, or sign up for Prime, you can get it for one. How are they going to know what's good or bad? So I guess what I'm trying to say is I've never been to a Chili's, and I don't expect to be to a Chili's anytime soon. Continuing along the... capturing the Benghazi guy and these parrots. Parrots, that's not the word. These bull, they're parroting their own 10-year-old argument, 12-year-old argument about going to Iraq. Iraq and Benghazi, there are issues. I'm sure the rest of this network has covered that ad nauseum. I mean, this is PRN. We are moving into a new location, and we hope that you will still send us your orders for supplements. Please come with us. I'm sure that's been covered ad nauseum, and I have plenty to say. I mean, look, the people, the architects of the Iraq War, I think it's a perfect term for them, because they essentially built this structure that collapsed, and now they're complaining about the guy who came to sweep up the mess. And look, Obama's not perfect, but let's step away from he's not perfect too. He's better than, and recognize he's better than. I think there can be little doubt on that. Let's keep pressing him. And there are major flaws, but you're talking about the President of the United States. He's not going to be everything you want him to be. He's not. And if I was quicker, I'd remember, what is that everywhere you want to be? He's not Visa. Okay? He's not Visa. I'm going to write that down. The President, right here, I'm writing it down. I mean, the President is not Visa everywhere you want to be. That's probably not even Visa. The point is, immigration, Visa, there's a tangent I could go off on there. But why should I bother? Because I don't need to go off on tangents here on PRN. We are moving... people to tears. We hope that you'll cry with us. The point is, by the way, I think the real slogan for PRN is, just in case you're wondering, hey, what is it? PRN, we are moving forward. We hope that you don't mind us telling you about that repeatedly in a way of hoping that you'll pay attention. They're architects. The building collapsed, or maybe they're not even architects. Maybe they're arsonists who set a building on fire. Then they run outside, and while you're out there in your robe and holding your family close and watching everything burn up, they're complaining that the firefighter stepped on your roses. You know, they say winners write history. Well, no, the winners don't necessarily write history. Apparently, the loudest pundits write history. The people that own the textbooks write the history. That's what... Can you believe... I mean, can you... Like, you're, I know you people are... You people are smart people. People here. PRN. We are people reading news. People reacting to the news. We are people reacting. Now, people real numbers. Possible reunion nullification. We are moving... into a alphabet-based system. We hope that you will COMEWITHUS. I can't even say the blind hatred of Obama is not a factor. That's what people will say. It's a blind hatred of Obama. No, it's just the blind pursuit of power, the conceit that you can continue to trumpet out things that play to a rabid base. I mean... Fortunately, it works. Unfortunately, it works. But, you know, look at Eric Cantor's defeat as a warning. I mean, I've said it before on the show many times. The right, throughout decades, intentionally have created a Frankenstein monster. They delegitimized education and science and media and truth and knowledge. And they've delegitimize these things by attacking them in the short-sighted pursuit of their own power advantage and the short-sighted exploitations of people's prejudices. And instead of demanding people become better, instead of demanding them to lift themselves out of their own ignorance and isolation, they've catered to that ignorance and isolation. And now what they've done is they've created a generation of people that no longer, they're so removed from seeing that these are just play words, that these are just coy attempts at manipulation, so remember that they've had it passed down as actual truth, and therefore they cannot believe any other alternative. It's like that experiment that was recently made in the news about the monkeys. You guys know the experiment. The experiment was basically, I think there was a group of five monkeys in a experiment room, which is also what the original name of this show was going to be, the experiment room on PRN. We are moving to remove all references to experiment room. We hope that you'll come with us. It was experiment room, five monkeys. There was like a banana on a ladder or something like that. There's a banana, some bananas high up. And when one of the monkeys would climb to get the bananas, the experimenters would like cause some sort of harm to all of the monkeys. Let's say they shocked them. I don't know if that's what they did. And so eventually the group of five monkeys learned that they shouldn't go for the bananas. So what would happen if any time a monkey went for the bananas, the other monkeys would pull them down and beat them up because they didn't want to have the group hurt. And slowly the experimenters would remove one monkey at a time. And the system would keep up that anyone who went for the bananas got beaten up. Now they stopped shocking after the first, you know, time to teach the lesson. There was no longer shock. It was just the monkeys and the banana. And eventually they replaced all of the original monkeys. And so there were just a group of monkeys that anytime one of them climbed up to get the banana, the rest of them pulled him down and beat him up. They never knew why. They just knew that you were supposed to beat up the guy going for the bananas. And the Republican base has become the monkeys who just beat up the guy going for the banana. Beat up the guy going, you know, it's like helping people is bad, or healthcare is, but whatever the specific term of the day, science is bad, or liberals are bad. I mean, we don't think about why you think. I've often said, I don't care which way you end up voting on an issue or coming out on an issue, as long as you really think about it. And I still feel that way. And I admit I haven't always stayed. I don't want to stay just to an orthodoxy. I want to approach every issue I have time to think about and decide what it should be. But damn it, I'm not a monkey going out for a banana. I mean, I guess I am. If you go into the probably some other science shows here, I actually think on Tuesdays at 7:15 there's a show called "The Monkeys Going for Bananas" on PRN. Or hoping that you with us, but that's not. It's not me. I'm the type of guy that says, "Hey, let's not play the blame game on." On Benghazi, you know, they got the Benghazi suspect, and it just strikes me, they, being Obama administration, that you would wish the people that have been screaming about this, like, do I find myself starting to tell the story and then saying, like, well, duh. I mean, if things are so absurd, if you were to present some of these things, the Iraq architects coming back out, the Benghazi people downplaying the Benghazi suspect capture. I mean, if you were to present them as a story to a publisher or an entertainment outlet or someplace, you wouldn't publish it. They'd be like, these heroes are too over the top. These heroes, villains, Freudian, are too over the top. It's not realistic. And yet, boom, there you are. You have the Benghazi suspect caught and the people that have been screaming about Benghazi saying it's a distraction from Benghazi. Or poo-pooing. I mean, this is a president that actually gets things done. Again, not perfect, but, you know, while the Republicans are playing the blame game over Benghazi, he's playing the let's get the guy that did it, or let's find out what actually happened over it. And look, the blame game is just a game. It's not real. And I will readily acknowledge that I, by being a pundit of sorts, am part of the blame game, what do you call it? Hierarchy. No, that's not it. The pundocracy. I'm not very pundit. I'm a dude with a mic and a dream. This is from David Feldman, a very funny comedian, used to be head writer of Dennis Miller, back when Dennis Miller was not totally loon. And this was his time
This was his comment on Benghazi. "While Republicans," that's how he talks, "spent our time and yes, our money trying to blame Obama for Benghazi, Barack Obama went and caught the guy who did it. Consider the waste. Just so Republicans could politicize a tragedy. 13 hearings, 25,000 pages of documents, and 50 briefings. Not to mention all the money these tightwads who are keeping our economy dragging down because they won't spend a few dollars on child food." That was my introduction. Back to Feldman. "Unlike Bush and Cheney, when something happens on his watch, President Obama fixes it. The Obamacare website is up and running. He catches the guy responsible for Benghazi. Republicans are incompetent because they live in a world devoid of facts. That's why 9/11 happened. That's why it took Obama to kill Bin Laden. There's a very simple narrative to American history that the GOP will never shake. Hoover crashed the economy. FDR saved America. Bush almost wiped us out. Obama saved our country. That's how history will record events, no matter how much the GOP huffs and puffs. That's why the GOP despises Obama. President Obama reminds the GOP of how ignorant and incompetent they are." I guess that's sort of similar to my idea that the winners don't write history anymore, that the history book people do. They're trying desperately. It's like naming an airport after Reagan, the guy that fired the air traffic controllers. That they're trying so hard to change history. They are propagandists, and it's sad. I mean, look, the Democrats could do better messaging. I said before, the Republicans, they have spent generations focused on messaging, focused on you know, the idea if you say something enough times, it'll become true. Focus on saying things that don't exist. Repeating the liberal media doesn't exist. Activist judges don't exist. Democratic leadership doesn't exist. But they just repeat these phrases over and over again. And I swear, if they were smart, they'd have a show on PRN. We are moving to repeat phrases over and over again. We hope that they will believe us. Which shifts me, I think, to my last... possibly my last topic for today, but from Lee. He's a bummer. You know, Lee Papa's very... you hear my paper shuffling? He's a very cultured guy. I don't know if you know this about Lee Papa, repundit.blogspot.com, but one time he was asked to solve everything, and he didn't. That's why we're at peace right now. They have a smell... someone just designed an O-phone, they're calling it, you know, for olfactory. Of course, this is not a time to, the New York City summer is not when you really need to be promoting smelling. I think, you know, that by using all these different little scents, you can make combinations up to, I think, 250 or 25,000 25,000 different scents combined. I mean, it's a very complex, you know, it's going to ruin sexting, or it's going to really enhance it. It's just, it's a frightening thing, but what will be interesting to me is to see, okay, where's our economic model? There is a value to being able to send someone and smell. Can you imagine the therapeutic value of smell? Because smell, I believe, this is my pop understanding, because it is such a, of our senses, it's the one that we're, I believe we're less, the least in touch with, it's a big trigger. Deja vu is triggered by smell. Often somebody once said, look it up, I haven't researched this, so don't quote me. I know my enemies are out there circling. Imagine the therapeutic impact of smell. Imagine you're a soldier suffering from PTSD and you're having an episode and your therapist is able to remotely send a smell that puts you into a better place. That is great. That is not financially lucrative, commercially exploitable. So unless Smell-O-Vision or whatever it's called finds a way to make money commercially, is it going to survive? We should be supporting things that make the world a better place, that prevent PTSD, not just ones that you can attach to an emoji and put on a screen in Chili's and whatever other things I put on, mentioned today. YouTube, Adele, PRN. Right? But that's not how we work here. Someone's got to find a way to make a dollar off of it, or it doesn't happen. And that is a frustration of mine. Not that everything needs to be lovey-dovey, but there's got to be room and a place for funding of things, artistic, medical, cultural, communal, public goods in a vast array of spaces that do not necessarily have exploitable commercial potential, but whose value to mankind is unparalleled. And I think that's the message of Cheeto in the Room tonight. On PRN. PRN, the Progressive Radio Network. We are moving to a
cheater in the rude-based economy. We hope that you will cash in with us. Check us out at GetRichCheating.com, Twitter, Jeff Kreisler, K-R-E-I-S-L-E-R, or Rude Pundit. And remember to always hug people who you find attractive. Good night, everybody.